Hi, good morning, everyone. It's so lovely to see so many friendly faces, at least this early in the morning. So thank you so much for being here. My name is Amaya, and today I'm going to be discussing one of our more recent analyses looking at the profile of anonymous partners among men who have sex with men and transgender women recently diagnosed with HIV or other STIs in Lima, Peru.
Can you all hear her, by the way?
Not really.
Not really?
Okay, why don't you do test?
What if I go closer? Can you guys hear me now? Okay. Perfect. So to begin, much of the literature suggests that the HIV epidemic in Latin America is highly concentrated among MSM, with a prevalence of HIV among MSM in Central and South America estimated to be at 15%. Interestingly, as compared to men in the general population, MSM in Latin America have more than 30 times the odds of HIV infection. Now, turning our attention to Peru, as you can see, existing literature parallels and supports our understanding of HIV and STI as a concentrated epidemic, disproportionately impacting the lives of gender and sexual minorities in this region. It's important to state that the primary mechanism of HIV transmission is sexual, highlighting the need to better understand high-risk sexual acts across ranging partnership structures. Though much literature exists across disciplines examining the correlates between partnership structures and risk among gender and sexual minorities, limited work has focused specifically on anonymous sex partnerships. As you can see from bullet point one, anonymous sex is defined as a sexual activity in which partners' identities are unknown to each other, often intentionally, at the time of the activity's occurrence. In the case of our study, we used this definition and further provided clarifying examples for our participants. The predominant body of literature in this area emerges from the Global North, with the majority of studies conducted in urban areas in the United States and more recent work emphasizing venue, cruising, and internet-based modalities in Western Europe, and recently a lot of work is coming out of Australia. Much of this literature highlights the association between anonymous sex and unprotected anal and vaginal intercourse, substance abuse, in the case of the United States, linking to the growing meth epidemic, and partnership concurrency. Additionally, it is worth noting that much of the work looking at partnership structures and HIV-STI risk suggests that the majority of unprotected sex occurs in the context of primary partnerships. With an increased interest in high-risk network composition and concurrency, much of this literature tends to dichotomize partnership structures as primary versus non-primary, and more recently, trichotomizing between primary versus casual and sex clients. As such, little is known about the characteristics of anonymous partnerships among MSM, and even less so among transgender women. It's worth noting that there's a current increase in internet dating and hookup websites, mobile applications globally. There is the age of sexual debut is decreasing, and lifetime sexual partners is increasing. This is a phenomenon affecting the general population and gender and sexual minorities, underscoring the need for us today to better understand partnership structures and risk behaviors. So the data that I'm presenting today comes from a cross-sectional study conducted between January 2011 and 2012 in Lima, Peru. Study participants comprised of MSM and trans women who had previously undergone routine HIV and STI testing and tested positive within the last 30 days. Additionally, enrollment criteria required that participants report at least one sexual partner that was either male or trans women or transgender woman in the past 3 months. Our survey assessed demographics, HIV STI history, attitudes related to partner notification, characteristics of up to their three most recent partners. So our demographic and behavioral characteristics for this population were calculated and reported overall and by number of anonymous partners reported in the last 3 months. to compare characteristics between partners reporting any anonymous partnership as compared to none, chi-squared, Fisher exact for dichotomous variables, and t-test for continuous variables were conducted. To account for the clustering by participant, since participants could report up to three last partnerships, we ran generalized estimating equations to assess characteristics between the participant and partnership level and associations with anonymous sex. Unstructured correlation matrices were assumed for all GEE models, and partnerships missing any of the key data, any data for the key variables, were excluded from our models. So we had a total sample of 395 participants with a mean age of 31 years overall. Significant differences in the characteristics of participants reporting at least one anonymous partnership in the last 3 months were higher education, meaning university education or above as compared to secondary education or less, and sexual role, whereas moderno compared to receptive or insertive. Moderno being a term for MSM who engage in both insertive and receptive intercourse. Below is a breakdown of our STI diagnosis across the full sample and those individuals reporting anonymous partnerships. As you can see, the numbers are pretty close. So again, among our 395 participants, there were close to 5,000 partnerships reported. A quarter of these partnerships were anonymous partners. Now, among the most recent partners, so again, participants could report up to three. 84 participants reported at least one anonymous partner, and there was 132 partnerships reported with anonymous partners. Now, participant characteristics associated with reporting a recent anonymous partner included older age, higher education, and again, we see this moderno sexual role. Partnership level characteristics that were associated with an increased odds of having an anonymous partner included female partner of the gender of the partner, and partner being perceived as the source of infection, and disclosure of status to partner described as not important. There's two things here that we need to pay careful attention to. It's worth noting that transgender was not significant, though verged on significance. From our qualitative data, we see the potential for misclassification bias between female and transgender perception of partner's gender identity. Additionally, with the last two points, we need to be careful because we cannot disentangle the temporality. It's possible that because participants perceive the anonymous partner being their source of infection, they also are less likely to disclose. So discussing quickly before our conclusions and significance, the limitations of the study is generalizability. It's important to highlight that this is a cross-sectional study conducted with a very high-risk population of MSM and trans women. All participants were HIV and STI positive and were already accessing care. All measures are self-report and as such subject to desirability, misclassification, among other biases. And again, temporality is an issue. But the main take home and why we should all care to do more research on anonymous partners is that there's a high prevalence of anonymous sex among high-risk MSM and trans women in Peru. This suggests that not only is more information needed, but existing data that collects this information should do secondary analyses to see if those characteristics match the information presented here. These data suggest that anonymous sex partners of MSM and trans women are a key population to partner notification efforts, and they present unique challenges for partner notification given the fact that they are anonymous. However, this is a challenge that I think today we are particularly well suited to address given the advent of technologies such as Facebook, Grindr, Manhunt, etc., that are accessible to us as researchers to tap into this population. Thank you.
Thank you so much. That was a great talk. So are there any questions? If you have any questions, please come up to the mic. Do you have a question? Great. Lizar has a question.
You can come right up here if you're the moderator.
Okay. Actually, before your presentation, I was thinking about the partner notification of anonymous partners. So, of course, it's challenging, as you said, but have you thought of ways of how these partners could be identified or notified in the way?
It's challenging. It's challenging across global context. In the context of Peru, there exists no third-party notification system through the existing health systems. So it's a hard question to answer, because in the context of the United States, where departments of public health do have these systems in place, they are collaborating with Facebook, Grindr, Manhunt to help use some of these software platforms. In the context of Peru, I have been thinking about it, but I think it becomes a systems issue. So the next step after these formative preliminary data is to then go to Ministry of Health, Department of Public Health, and partner with some policymakers to help make partner notification part of the agenda. Yes? As part, Dr. Garcia asked, what do I mean that there's no third-party notification system in Peru? From my research, and I could be wrong, what I have understood to be the case in Peru is that third-party notification is not part of routine care when someone tests HIV or STI positive at a STD clinic in Peru.
It is supposed to, okay? So anybody who is, especially for STI, not for HIV, so the rule is that they have their partner notification, their special forms that can be given to the partner.
Mm-hmm. But what I think that Cesar was mentioning, so there is a system, supposedly, in most of our countries, right? But it's not being used. But the question is, how are you going to deliver that information or that card that has to do with the information if you don't know who is the partner? So I think that was the question. I mean, how can you approach that partner if there is no name and no way to address it?
Right.
So I think that's a big deal. But partner notification as a policy exists. The difficulties are the implementation and the practice.
So I think in terms of my response, I misspoke. That is the key issue, which is partner tracing. And when we're dealing with anonymous partners, tracing is the key issue. Again, by definition, partners are anonymous. So with this subpopulation, which I'm trying to argue that is particularly at high risk and deserves our attention, more unique strategies are needed to tap into anonymous. And I really don't have the answer, and I'm happy to discuss with anyone who has suggestions, but that's our challenge, is the fact that they are anonymous.
Leandro Mena from Mississippi. Am I allowed to representation? And I have a suggestion. Sometimes when you have anonymous partners, it helps, especially for assisting the visual specialist, to ask the infected individual, where do you meet your partners?
Right.
So then you can find places that you can target for outreach and screening of asymptomatic individuals as a way to kind of address the issue that exactly that you can really contact partners who are anonymous because you don't know. I mean, but at least helping where do they meet the partners?
Yeah. Thank you. That's definitely a key limitation that we did not ask. And it also speaks to the time that this data was collected and to the previous points about anonymous partner venue and internet are very different. And so that's going to help us adjust these strategies.
Excellent. Thank you so much. Appreciate it. Wonderful job, Maya. Thank you.